every week of this Isaiah series, we're going to start with a passage from the New Testament that I think is an echo of Isaiah. Today we have quite a passage. Revelation 4. Please turn to Revelation 4. Verse 1. After this, I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice which I heard speaking to me like a trumpet said, "Come up here, and I will show you what must take place after this." At once I was in the Spirit. And behold, a throne stood in heaven, with one seated on the throne. And he who sat there had the appearance of jasper and carnelian. And around the throne was a rainbow that had the appearance of an emerald. Around the throne were 24 thrones, and seated on the thrones were 24 elders, clothed in white garments with golden crowns on their heads. From the throne came flashes of lightning and rumblings and peals of thunder. And before the throne were burning seven torches of fire, which are the seven spirits of God. And before the throne there was, as it were, a sea of glass like crystal. And around the throne, on each side of the throne, are four living creatures, full of eyes in front and behind. The first living creature like a lion. The second living creature like an ox. The third living creature with the face of a man, and the fourth living creature like an eagle in flight. And the four living creatures, each of them with six wings, are full of eyes all around and within. And day and night they never cease to say, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty, who was and is and is to come." Turn to Isaiah 6. Since we all perfectly understood the passage in Revelation, we'll just move on. I do encourage you, if reading that created a lot of questions about what in the world is it talking about, I encourage you to get a good commentary and carefully soak that up. But I do believe that so much of what we read in the New Testament is a variation on a theme that was first presented to us in Isaiah. Over and over and over again. And I have an interesting question that I've been posing to myself this week, and I pose to you now. We know that Jesus studied Isaiah. He quoted it. He saw himself as the fulfillment of it. And Isaiah, he probably memorized. Because as a student of a rabbi, he would have memorized the scriptures. And here's my question. The one who John says told his disciples that, well, he's actually telling the Father about the glory that he shared with the Father before the foundation of the world. I so would like to understand more of what Jesus thought and felt and understood when he read Isaiah. Now, the first 2 weeks, we saw different messages that Isaiah had for the people. But this is a whole new ball game, friends. This is an encounter with God by a good guy, by a good sinful guy. Let's see what happens here. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim. Each had six wings. With two, he covered his face, and with two, he covered his feet, and with two, he flew. And one called to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." You see the echo now? You see these echoes from Isaiah, written 700 to 800 years before Revelation? Why the echo? Is he just mimicking Isaiah? No. It's because what Isaiah wrote is true. And he's reinforcing that. And his symbolic description of this encounter is even deeper. John's is. Holy, holy, holy. As a little boy, I didn't care much for church. In fact, I was bored. But I loved the music. My mom played the organ, and I loved the music. And there's no hymn that I loved more that I would find myself singing through the week, even as a little boy, more than the hymn we're going to close with today. It's a hymn I hope you know. Holy, holy, holy. And for some reason, even as a little boy, when I certainly had not a theological thought in my mind, somehow that word, that phrase, that emphasis, that intensity, three times, holy, 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 even as a little boy, that grabbed me. That spoke to me. It said, pay attention to this. And then the rest of the song, and I'm so grateful we're going to sing it, teaches us how to express this relationship between a holiness and ourselves. So what is holy? What does holy mean? Well, first of all, I think there's an infinity in the definition of holiness that we can't approach. What I mean by that is we can't get our arms around holiness. But we must, we should, we must embrace it and try to find more and more, what is this holy? What is this triune holy that is our God, that is God? In the Hebrew, as you can see on the program, and this is kind of surprising maybe, because this isn't very religious language, is it? Separate, withdrawn. God is holy. Therefore, he's separate, withdrawn. What's it mean? Don't we know that holiness has to do with perfection? With his character? With with his very essence. He is other than his creation. This is very important these days, friends. I talk to a lot of folks who are not believers in Jesus. They admire Jesus. They like to kind of kidnap him for whatever their worldview is. But he's not the eternal creator and sustainer of the universe. He is other because he's perfect. Here is the amazing mystery of our faith. He is transcendent, other, and then he became man. He became flesh and dwelt among us. The word that John talks about is the Holy God. It's the holy, holy, holy of Isaiah. It created the world. It sustains the world. It is other. And the mystery of our faith and our message to a lost and dying world is that other took on flesh. And transcendence never left, but immanence came. Immanence is here. You could have touched him. You could have shared a meal with him. You could have laughed with him. You could have arm wrestled him. You may have even won because he's set aside the rights to always winning. I had a profound day yesterday that I didn't envision. I was asked to speak to the chaplain, to be the chaplain for the Wesleyan football team yesterday. And so I've done this before. And then I was asked to do the prayer before and after the game. Well, this is kind of a whole day deal because we met at 11:15 and the game got over about 9:15. So it was quite a day. But I talked about without going into the details of the story, I talked about when I got to the end of it, let's look at Jesus in the context of what kind of leader was he. I had told the story of two men, one a relative, one Captain Dick Winters of Easy Company in the Band of Brothers. True stories. Both were true stories. I said what we learn about both of these guys is that they were leaders who never took anything from their men. They only gave. So I asked the group, based on what you know about Jesus, what did he ever take from anybody? When I said this to Sue earlier, she said, well, when Mary anointed his feet with oil, I said, Sue, he didn't take that. He received that. Jesus received. The only thing I can think of that he took is our sins. He took our unholiness. And has made us holy. You know how we need to look at passages like this, which seem kind of distant? We need to look at them through the prism of Jesus. And that brings them near. He who knew no sin, other. He who knew no sin, different. He who knew no sin, became sin so that we might become the righteousness of God, the holiness of God. We're called a holy people. Why would that be true of us? Only one reason. Because he who knew no sin became sin so that we might become the righteousness of God. But let's go on with this story in Isaiah. Because I do think we see ourselves in this. And the foundations of the threshold shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke. And I said, woe is me, for I am lost. I like the, I think the King James says, I am undone. For I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. I am one of these, and I have seen the other. And I am undone. He is shattered. Much like John. John sees lightning and thunder and pyrotechnics. Isaiah sees pyrotechnics. And in each heart, there's this just blast furnace effect of just this much of a glimpse of the otherness in perfection of God. Then one of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for. Jesus has touched our lips with a burning coal. The burning coal of his shed blood. And our sin is atoned for. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Then I said, here am I, send me. Friends, you want to see what we in the faith call grace at work? Grace, for by grace we have been saved, through faith, not of ourselves. Because it has nothing to do with what we can do for God. It has everything to do with what he has done for us. This picture of sinful Isaiah saying, I can't even be in this the same place as this holiness. And the holiness comes to him. And it says, your guilt is gone. You are right with me. Now you and I can live and work together. It's exactly what we see in Jesus. It's grace. It's unmerited. But it's God's favor poured out on us. If you think that Isaiah is so distant, and remember, all of you who are a part of this church are being asked to read the book of Isaiah. And wow, I'm getting some great emails and questions. And yeah, do it. But if you read that and think, this is so obscure, it is not even obscure. It's as close as when you look at yourself in the mirror and you ask the question, am I a child of God, saved by grace, eternally secure in him, or am I not? We want to be the people who with Isaiah, when the act of grace has come to us and we've received it, and it came our way. Notice that. It came to him. God initiates it. And he says, okay, who's going to do my work? We say, here we are. Send us. Let's sing this song. I hope your hearts just pour out in praise. Pay attention to these words and make them your own. Scott?